Hey guys, Melissa here. I blog at our family website, www.thecorkums.com, which we affectionately call the Corkboard. This is the Uncorked Podcast. If I had to choose a descriptor for our family, it would be outside the box. Whether it's adopting three unrelated adolescents out of birth order, or trying to run a coffee shop in our quote-unquote spare time right after adopting, we love adventure. We had to give up that coffee shop, and our three oldest kids are launched for now. But with lots of extended family living at home and a full-time wellness business, there still aren't many dull moments. We've met so many amazing people with fascinating stories along our journey. I'd love to introduce them to you. You are listening to episode 5, which is actually part 2 of a 2-part series. So if you missed last week, pause where you are and go catch up with the first part of my conversation with Dr. Chris Kittle about all things older child adoption. When we stopped last week, we were chatting about the can'ts versus won'ts and the importance of a trusted therapist in your child's life. Guys, God must have been watching over us because we hit the jackpot when we selected a therapist for our kids. She's amazing, and I trust her with our lives. But let me tell you, they're not all created equal. There's a unique skill set that therapists who work with kids from hard places need to have. If you need some tips on how to vet one for your family, I'm going to post a link on the show notes page to a great blog post on one of my favorite blogs for connected parenting, parentingwithconnection.info. Okay, sorry for that little tangent. Let's jump back in for the second part of my conversation with Dr. Kittle.
This is where I think therapy becomes so important, particularly with a therapist who knows something about older child adoption, to be able to help their child work through that so that they aren't stuck, but that they can move forward into whatever it is that they need to do next or whatever area they need to move in, whatever area they need to grow in.
I think for sure, the biggest takeaway we've had and the most practical thing that's been helpful for us is in that vein, which is especially for older kids, because of those boxes that we were talking about, that different paradigm, whenever we can bring in a third party into the situation, like someone who's considered a neutral third party by both of us to be that person to speak into whatever situation it is, whether it's an education situation or a spiritual situation or whatever, that those have been the situations that we have navigated together the most successfully, because our messy relationship and attachment and all those preconceived notions that we have about how a child should act and they have about how a parent should act can be circumvented by both of us trusting another person in play to give advice and walk with both of us through that. And I think that's been really, really helpful. And I wish I would have figured that out like 2 years earlier than I did.
Right. If you would have known that beforehand, then you would have had it at the very beginning, right?
Well, right. And I think even for me, like some of it's total stubborn pride. Like I would think I can walk them through this. I know, you know, even just something dumb, like I can teach them how to ride a bike or how to swim. I know how to do that. I've taught other kids how to do this. And I didn't, you know, I was just like so dead set on why can't you learn this from me? And I don't know why it took me so long to figure out like the relationship, that like attachment piece, that messy part of me as a mom. Like they couldn't compartmentalize that and put that aside and be like, oh, this is just a person teaching me how to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. They would bring all the emotional baggage of who I represented in their life and how that tied into their trauma with other lost primary caregivers. And it's just a dicey relationship, the relationship that they have with adoptive mom. And it's adoptive dad too a little bit, but I feel like the moms get the short end of the stick.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I agree.
And I don't know exactly why that is. I mean, I have some theories and things, but it just is the way it seems to play out. No matter how great of a mom you are, you just represent so much loss that you just always get this, you get the bad deal. And that just makes it really hard to do the things for your kid that you know are good for them or that show that you care. And for me in particular, my love language is acts of service. And the strongest part of that love language for me is how I show love. I mean, I can recognize love given to me in a lot of other different ways, but it's my go-to for how I show people love. And it's even my apology language. Like, I don't really care if you say you're sorry. I just want your actions to change. Like it's all about behavior, really, right? So for them not to accept like these acts of service, to do things, to research for them, to teach them something new was really hard for me. And my last love language in both like how I love others and how I receive love is gifts, which mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, maybe by just because of their lack of in their institution situation and all of their different trauma, I feel like I haven't met a kid from trauma yet who doesn't love gifts as a love language. I don't know if it's naturally how my three kids that came to us as older kids would have, if that would have been their love language had they not had all their trauma. But I know that for sure that is a great way that they understand. It's like the universal love language is gift giving, and it's just not something I do very well.
I totally understand. I also am active service, and gifts is very difficult for me. But one of the things that we briefly talked about it in the book. Unfortunately, we couldn't get as deep into everything that we wanted to, or no one would be able to lift the book. But one of the things that we talk about having to do with love language is a lot of kids, it is gifts, or it appears to be gifts. And I don't know that it actually is their love language. I think it is what they equal status, or they equal being, is by getting things. They're more important when they get things, because that's what they come from. That's what they've learned. That's what they've experienced. That's what they've seen. And so I have not fully worked out, even in my head, how that exactly looks and how that plays out. Because if you, one of the ways to tell what someone's spiritual gift is by how they respond in love. Well, many of these kids don't know how to do that. And many of these kids aren't in a place that can do that. And so it's very hard to know how they express love, how they feel loved. Because fortunately, it's like a bucket. There's so many holes that you may never be able to fill it up, no matter how much you pour into it, because of their trauma and their past experiences. Whereas one mom put it, they're like a vacuum cleaner. You can never give them enough. They just always want more. They want more of you. They want more gifts. They just want more, more, more. It's like an insatiable desire that is never, ever going to be filled. And so determining how to meet that need that you know you could never meet without getting yourself depleted is incredibly difficult.
Amen. We have a child who used to joke her primary love language was all five. Like, yeah. we would read them and we'd be like, nope, she needs that one and yeah. that one and that one too. And the rest of her, I mean, her story isn't over, obviously, but she has had a significant shift. And for her, it was a couple things, but I think one of them was she made her peace with God. And I know not every family who has adopted has a faith background or is coming from that perspective. And we were raising her and influencing her with a Christian perspective and worldview, but there was something that clicked later, and she was at that point in time not in our care. She was living with another family, and something clicked for her there, and it was literally like a light bulb. She made her peace with God, and all of those holes, like only God can do, plugged up, you know, and right. all of a sudden she's a totally different kid. And I remember one of the conversations we had, I had to give her a no over the phone, and I just remember dreading it and just thinking like, oh, like how are we going to circumvent this? How am I going to lay this out so it doesn't sound like a no? And she just was like, she kind of got to the no before me. She's like, I know you're not going to be able to do this, but this is what, you know, this is what's important to me. And then the rest I'm really okay with. And I was like, I just remember, I think my jaw like literally hit the floor. And I just remember thinking like, who are you? And what have you done with my kid? But I think we spend so much time sometimes trying to figure out what's going to fill all those holes. And again, in our heads, we know those are God-sized holes in our hearts, but we still, I know I spent so much time when we were in crisis running around trying to fill those holes, because I was just so convinced that once those holes were filled, if I could love her in the right language enough, then mm-hmm. she would find some peace. And then, yeah. and if she could find peace, then we could all find peace.
Yeah. You know, yeah. at one point was we were riding, I came to the realization, I guess I had must have been reading or heard a sermon or something about how Jesus says we need to build our house on the rock, on him, and not on the sand, and how the house that's built on the sand sways and can easily collapse. And it really hit me as I was thinking about trust and how you build trust and older child adoption and how similar that illustration is. You know, when you bring a child home that is much younger, who is, you know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 or younger, you have an opportunity to build trust, and you can work on that foundation, and you can make that, pour that cement, and you can clear, you know, the ground before you pour the cement. You can frame it properly. You can make sure it's completely set before you start building any structure, as far as helping them and preparing them for adulthood and them becoming who they are meant to be and who they're going to become. But when you bring a child home and they're 10, they're 12, they're 13, they're 14, you don't have a lot of time to help them build their structure and lay the foundation. It's like kind of shoddy construction work. And you have to hope that you can set this house up on this wet foundation that's going to stay, and yet some hardship comes in, or something from their past comes back up for them, or something happens where they feel like we as parents haven't been very trustworthy in some way, and suddenly all the work that you've done putting the house up, the framing up, falls down. And now you have a giant mess on your hands, and then you got to start over. And for some families, I know we felt this way when our daughter was probably 14, 15. We weren't sure if when she turned 18, she was going to flee. She did not. We weren't actually sure even her senior year in high school whether she was going to bolt or not when she turned 18. She did not. She decided to stick around, and she's still home. She'll be 20 next month. And she's still home, and she's really growing and learning. And I'm very grateful for that, because we can still work on that house and preparing her for life outside of our house so that she is a little more prepared. But you don't know. You don't know when they come home at 13 or 14 if you have to hurry up and try to put this structure up as quick as possible, and you just have to hope that there's no big winds that are going to come through and knock it over.
Yeah, I remember thinking like 4 years was a lot of time, because our oldest was 14 when he came home. And I just remember thinking, well, there's so much we can teach in 4 years. Like, we'll get him all prepared, we'll launch him. And that 4 years rolled around, and gosh, it was like the blink of an eye. And I just thought that was not enough time for at all. And do you ever feel like, and using your house description, do you ever feel like in hindsight you would have approached your relationship differently because you didn't have the years to build the foundation? Like, if you had, you know, with your 11-month-old, you're right. Like, you get to lay, there's so many firsts, and you get to lay certain things, and developmentally, toddlers and even school age, like elementary school kiddos, there's still a malleability and there's still a lot developmentally that you can feed into. And I think that does make a huge difference. And our little guy who came home at 2.5 has his fair share of problems for sure. And he has been a challenging placement for us, but there's something about at the end of the day that's different attachment wise. And it really just comes down to the fact that I think he came home at 2.5 instead of 12.5 or, you know, whatever. Do you ever think, like, maybe if I had thought of this house, like, I was inheriting a house that I needed to, like, remodel versus, like, building a house from scratch, if that would have changed how it all worked out? I mean, you guys are on really more solid footing than you thought you would be, you know, 2-3 years ago. But I always wonder, in our case, you know, what if we had just treated it more like an exchange student situation or a roommate situation, where we saw ourselves as a stepping stone? You know, we were willing to remodel as they were asking for remodel, but our expectations, I think, would have been very different. And I think so much of our hard 2 and 3 years had to do with that, like, oh, it's getting a little too intimate for our liking, for our comfort level. And that's really where the pushback came. It was in that we were pushing for connection and intimacy and what we understood to be in the box of family when they weren't ready to, or maybe they didn't want to. And I don't know, have you thought about that? Did you talk to other families about that, about, you know,
there were
if we
a couple
had
families
treated
who
it differently?
Felt like their kids were more like exchange students. And I don't know, I think they were speaking it more from their own connection perspective and how they felt about their child. And in some cases, the children came home not fully understanding adoption to begin with and kind of had an exchange student mentality. And so I think, I don't know, that's really difficult to answer. I don't know. The other part is the challenge as a parent that you realize you are the one who is setting the tone for them on what family looks like. And so when you approach it from the standpoint of an exchange student, then are you setting them up for a difficult future in them not really knowing what that family doesn't look like an exchange student? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think in my perfect world, we would have started off with less connections so that they could acclimate. And I think
sure.
we would have let them try to hope and pray that they would come to us. And we would be hoping for more traditional family connection. But I think we were parent trainers for Empowered to Connect. And so we were so like, connection, let's talk about your feelings. Like, mm-hmm. let's work through all this stuff. And I just, in hindsight, I'm thinking like, gosh, like we were so like overstepping our boundaries. And I just wonder if we had like, and we ended up having to bat so far off to keep peace and just, mm-hmm. you know, give up. You know, we were really challenged on what our values were and how we had to keep peace and what, you know, what was important and what the battles, you know, what hills we were going to die on totally shifted.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, and again, we'll never know for sure, you know, but I always wonder, like, if we had chosen different hills or less hills at the beginning, you know, would that counterintuitively allowed us a more traditional and healthier, probably, relationship later? But we kind of had to come around to those, you know, limited hills to die on, like the hard kind of crisis way, because, you know, that's how we learn in our house, like the hard way. And again, it's hindsight, it's speculation.
Yeah.
But
I think so much of it depends upon the child's personality and the child's experiences and the child's expectations, what they come expecting looking the family to look like and what they come expecting to experience in family. I think there's so many variables that I don't know that there's any one way to do it. There's one right way. I think that's the other thing that I, both in parenting and through the book, realized that there are just so many mysteries in older child adoption that may never be solved. There'll never be answers. There is no very clear answer, and there may never be an answer. And having to be okay with that and accept that, always having a mystery, I think it's hard for me because that's not the way I work. And also I think that is just part of older child adoption and that people who choose this journey need to accept that that's part of the journey. And it's a given at the very beginning, a given that you have to understand and you have to accept or it's not going to work.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And my husband and I are both engineers, engineer-minded, and we've spent many a night beating our head against the wall because I think in our brains, the way we're wired is we just want to figure it out.
Right.
And you're right. Like, there isn't a formula. There isn't, like I said, one kid's different to the other. And mm-hmm.
And sometimes one moment is different. What works one day does not work the next.
I know. I used to have this, people would ask, like, how are you doing? And I would be like, right in this moment, like, right now, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Subject to change, like, in seconds, but in an hour, like, I mean, and literally things can turn on a dime. I mean, I think with parenting all over the spectrum, birth kids, adoptive kids, all ages, but there was something special about the way the winds could change when all of our kids were home that I had never experienced in parenting before that just, I called it emotional whiplash because it could literally just happen so, so fast. And it was like, I literally could be talking to someone and hang up the phone and all hell could break loose. Or I'd be talking to someone, you know, 2 hours after World War III had happened in our house. And at that moment, we had reconnected and we were all good. But to say, like, answer the question, how are you, with like, I'm fine, is so inadequate when, you know, you were still reeling from the massive behavioral incident, you know, just right. hours before.
Right.
So,
the other thing that a mom shared was that, you know, when you have a child that you've had since infancy or toddler that becomes a teenager and they enter the quote-unquote well-known teenage years of attitude and disrespect, all of that kind of behavior, you can still see that cute, cuddly, adorable little baby or toddler. But you remember their sweet smile, their sweet giggle, their sweet antics. But when you bring a child home who's 13 or 12, and they are doing what 12 and 13-year-olds do on some level, far as having attitude and disrespect and behaviors, but you don't have those memories to reflect on, and you don't have those thoughts of there's a sweet little kid inside, it is really difficult for a lot of people to still love them in the midst of their disrespect and terrible behavior without those memories to know that there's a sweet little kid inside. It's very easy to forget when you don't have memories of that sweet little kid to remember that they are this person. They are a sweet little kid. They're just having troubles right now. And that was so enlightening to me, because that is the truth. You know, my younger is going to be not far away from being a teenager. And, you know, she's going to be doing the same stuff that my older did. Not all of it the same, but some of it's the same. And perhaps I'm going to respond differently because I do have those memories of her being sweet and innocent and snuggly or whatever that I don't have with my older.
Yeah. So true. And there's so much about that that's just sad, because you don't have that history, can't, and it goes both ways, right? Because there's not all those years where you were their world, their everything, you know, the person they wanted to see every day and hang out with, and, you know, in some cases, like, had separation anxiety.
Right.
And we don't have that mutual history, and it does make it so much harder.
There's another mom who keeps
all of that in perspective.
She had older biological children and then adopted some older kids. And so when they would all get together as a family, and, you know, the older children who are all married, many of which have children, would share about such and such at Christmas, that this particular Christmas, this happened, and they would laugh about the story and reminisce and things. And her, particularly one of her two older children, would talk about how difficult that was for her, because she didn't have those memories. She wasn't part of those memories, and she couldn't participate in that. She felt like she was missing out on something, not only in that moment at the dinner table and the laughter, but also having missed out on that Christmas event that happened even just 5 years previously, where she was still she wasn't in the family yet. And so sometimes I think as parents, we kind of forget the perspective of our kids and that they're feeling left out. Just like you said, they wish that they had come home younger, and they wish that they had baby pictures, and they wish that they had those memories in our family too. And so it just really makes me sad. It makes me sad because we missed out, and it makes me sad that they don't have those.
Yeah, we did a project 1 year. It didn't solve all the things, but I had this light bulb moment. It was a couple of Christmases after they'd been home, and we realized that one of the triggering things for one of our kids was our bio kids and our little guy from Korea had boxes of ornaments. And not just random ornaments, but ornaments like my in-laws and my parents both get the kids Christmas ornaments at Christmas. And so, you know, they only had like one ornament because they'd only been home for 1 year or whatever. And again, each of the ornaments had a story usually, or some kind of memory associated with it, or a shared experience. And so as we were coming up to Christmas 1 year, it was in one of my more thought out, because I really don't do holidays well, but in one of my more thought out moments, I enlisted all of our friends and family to sponsor ornaments for the kids to backfill their ornament boxes, and asked them to, you know, put little notes in with their gift, you know, just a memory or something that they enjoyed about them. So it didn't fit a lot of that, because you can't gain the shared memories back, obviously, but now they all have the same amount of ornaments. And we labeled them all with years. Like, people, I did a sign up genius, and people actually like signed up for years for each of the kids. And so they had ornaments, and we asked them to label them with a year and the whole nine yards. And it was really cool. I originally was going to do it for them all, but then, you know, my sanity kicked in. I was like, you can't do six kids' ornaments for backfill like all the years, right? And so then I'm glad that I wasn't able to do it, because it was like December 1st or something. Like, it wasn't that well thought ahead. And so I like scrambled and, you know, reached out to friends and family, and I was like, could you get me ornaments in like 4 days, you know, ship them to my house? But it was such a fun Christmas. And they, again, like, expectations have to be, there wasn't tears or any like large dramatic appreciation or whatever, but there was this deep felt unspoken gratitude. And it was one of my better parenting moments, because we didn't handle all of those things very well. But,
and it's clearly a great memory for them.
Yeah. And it was just something small and, you know, other families, you know, can do. And it's those little tidbits I think we take from each other as we're walking the road. You know, what can we do? What are the things we haven't thought of to make it easier for our families as we're walking these kind of, you know, unpaved roads where there's not a ton of experience?
Yeah.
Well, I am so thankful that you had time to spare to chat with me about the new book. And tell me what the title is again.
The book is Wisdom from Adoptive Families, Joys and Challenges in Older Child Adoption.
I love it. And you did send me a preview of the cover, and it's amazing. And so I think I have your permission to put that on the show notes page of the blog. So everyone will get just
cover,
a little preview.
There'll be perhaps some slight changes to it, but it'll be mostly like that.
And so super excited. And so timeline, I think, is still a little bit up in the air, but what's your rough timeline to get the book out?
We are expecting the book will launch December 15th, perhaps a little before that, depending upon, you know, there's lots of cogs in the wheel, depending upon how things flow. But for sure, by December 15th, it will be available to purchase. And I'm not sure, I have not gotten clear direction from them on whether we're going to be doing pre-sales or not. I hope to have that answer, you know, in the next week or so. But the editing process has taken a lot longer than I anticipated it to take. But, you know, when you go into something and you've never done it before, you have a certain set timeline in your head that you think is going to work, and then you realize there's all these extra steps that you didn't actually know about. So.
Sounds like when my husband does a DIY project at home.
Well, there's that too, yes. I've experienced that a few times.
No, that's great. But it'll be out by Christmas for sure. So
it will be
everyone needs to put this on their Christmas list, because Amazon does two-day shipping at its like slowest now. But, I mean, you could probably have it, like, if you live in a big city, in an hour. So December 15th is more than enough time to get the sucker for Christmas. So I'm super excited about that. I'm probably going to have to buy it and give it out to a bunch of people that need to read it.
Yes. Well, and we have a website that should be launching sometime this week called adoptionsurvival.com. And on there, we have some additional resources. There were some things that we wanted to include in the book, but due to space, it just was not possible. And so we have included those resources on the website. So people will have access to those even before the book comes available. And then they'll find me on Facebook at Chris Kittle, PhD. And we have an Adoption Survival Facebook page as well, which will, I try to post something several times a week, just great articles that I feel like could be very helpful to families. And I'll also be updating everything having to do with the book on the website as well and on my Facebook page.
I love it. I'm so excited to have that come out. Do you have another book project ever in your future, or did this like kill it for you?
One never knows, but I could certainly see me creating some sort of workbook to work in tandem with this book, just helping families to be able to reflect on how certain aspects apply to them. And if they're thinking about adoption, how they can work through how they're going to handle when an existing child injures or a new child injures or mistreats an existing child, or how they will prepare their extended family, or how they will do different things. And so I could see me doing that at some point in the future. Other than that, I don't really know. I just kind of feel like you just sort of go with it, and where it leads, it goes. I don't necessarily have anything specific in mind on what is next. I think it would be fabulous if there could be a book written having interviewed kids that have been adopted older and maybe are adults now, and kind of what they were missing, or perhaps what they needed, or perhaps what they wanted, or them being able to just reflect on that time of what it was like and how things could have been different or better, or how things were good. But I don't know, you know, that requires a level of reflection that I don't know if a lot of people are able to do. So I don't really know if I will be able to ever write that book or not. Who knows?
So I'm praying that you do, because I think that would be an amazing follow-up to the book that you just wrote.
And I think it would be so helpful for parents to just kind of, I guess, get an inside look of their kid, or potentially their kid coming in at 10, 12, 13, and just kind of what that felt like and what that was like, and the years that they had to shift from only being dependent upon themselves and only trusting that only they will take care of them, and they are the only ones that they can trust to watch their back, to now changing that to where they have parents who they're supposed to trust and who supposedly watches their backs. And how does that shift happen?
And I think, you know, this isn't the answer that my engineering brain wants to hear, but I kind of have this gut feeling that kids are going to say, especially if we can get that like 20 to 25 range where they really aren't still in the midst of it, where they've, you know, had a chance to maybe launch a little bit from their family or kind of get some space to reflect. I kind of feel like they're going to say, we all did our best and my parents did their best and it was hard, but it was going to be hard. And there wasn't a way to make it easy. Kind of like the butterfly getting out of the cocoon.
Yeah.
Like there's no easy out. And, you know, there's obviously things we can do that are better than other things. You know, there's attitudes we can have and language we can use and, you know, all of those things, but that there's no easy path, and that even families that struggle and kids that struggle may get to the other end and be like, not have the animosity that we are convinced they're going to have because it was just so rocky for those
right.
couple years. And I think that will be really redeeming and freeing for a lot of families, and maybe helpful for the kids too, I would hope.
Yeah. And even, you know, giving them an opportunity to speak back to kids who are being adopted at around the same age that they were. And what was it that you would have liked to have heard from someone who had been there? And what would you like to prepare them for? And what would you like to tell them? And that sort of thing. I think it would be a very helpful book. I just haven't, this has been my focus for 4 years. And so I have not wrapped my brain around what exactly that would look like.
Yeah. Well, you need to break and come up for air. I hear when you're writing a book, like your whole life stops. You probably need to
Yeah, the last
become
few years
a
when
person
I've
again.
Really been writing, it's been rough. Like that's all I do. That's all you do. It literally is all you do. I really naively went into this thinking that, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, we'd be good, we'd be done. Slam, bam, you got it. Yeah, I had no idea. It's all that, you know, that multiple step thing that you don't think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but
I'm certainly glad you stuck it out.
Yeah, and I do understand why people who are able to write books fairly quickly, it's because they go somewhere for long periods of time and can do nothing but that. Because, you know, when you're trying to parent and you're trying to work, you might get a day you take your kid to school and then you get until it's time to pick up that you can do nothing but work, but then you've kind of just gotten into the groove and you have to go and stop and switch gears again, put on a different hat for a while. And so, yeah, it's definitely been way more time consuming than either one of us anticipated, I think.
Good to know, in case I ever write that book.
Yes. Yeah, it's difficult.
So
way worthwhile.
I know
so worthwhile.
I believe it. Definitely worthwhile. So is there a book tour in your future? I know we've talked a little bit about this, maybe half jokingly, but I really would love to see you in person. And funny story, when I messaged you when we were on our road trip last year,
mm-hmm.
Totally was not on our road trip plans for me to like network with adoptive moms. It was
right.
My husband was not a fan. But so I'll tell you, because you didn't get the whole backstory. You just got this message from me that was like, hey, maybe we could meet up. So we drove 4,600 miles in 16 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And four of those, we were parked in Austin at a wedding. So, like, we really drove, like, 4,600 miles, like, in 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were in your area, and we, like, a stone in the highway, like, kicked up and cracked our windshield.
Oh.
So I was tasked with going out to get it fixed.
Uh-huh.
And so we decided, like, my husband would stay back at the hotel with the kids. And we had been camping throughout the road trip on and off anyway. And so by the time we got to Texas at the end of July and we had camped in Oklahoma, it was hot and the kids were hot and miserable. And our air conditioning in our van was a little wonky. So we were in a hotel by the time we got to Texas and they were super excited. And so we were like, they probably need some downtime. So the vote was I would go get the van fixed. He would kind of hang out for the morning in the hotel with the kids. And I was like, I'm going to call Chris and see if she can get together, like, and maybe meet me, like, at the glass place, and we're going to chat while I'm, so I literally was trying to fit you in to, like, because I remember you were like, I can only do, like, this time or that time, and I was like, no, I have, like, an hour.
Yeah.
This is my window, and it didn't work out, which I was really sad about, but,
yeah.
So anyway, that was a long story to ask you. Do you think there will be a book tour?
I do hope to be able to do some speaking engagements and being able to share and visit with other families, because that's really where my heart and where my passion is visiting with other families and being able to share the things that I learned in this book, because I've learned a lot. Oh my goodness, I learned so much. And not all of it got in the book. And so just being able to share with other families and, you know, sometimes it's about, as you mentioned, Mr. Lear, someone calling you to say, hey, I don't really think, I know, I don't know, this is really weird, but I might be the only one. Sometimes we're willing to do that one-on-one that we're not really willing to do in a big, large group. And so I really enjoy being that one-on-one person to be able to talk with people and just let them know that they're not alone and be able to share the experiences that I have heard from these 40 families and how these kids responded and that sort of stuff. So at some point I would like to do that. I have done some speaking here in the DFW area, and hopefully once the book is out in the next few months, then that will be something that I'll get to do more often.
Well, I'm super excited about that. And that's totally where my heart is too. We're like kindred spirits. So if I can like hop in your suitcase or something, I would, that's like my dream, is like travel the country and like sit with other adoptive parents and just give them a hug and tell them that they're not alone and it'll all work out. But well, I'm super excited, like I said, for the book. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing everything that you've learned. Maybe after the book comes out, you can come and like give us the whole lowdown of, this is all the stuff that I wish I could have put in the book and didn't. And that way you can have the book and then, you know, like an attached MP3 of the podcast. You can be like, and this is where all the rest of the information was.
Right.
No, right. And like you said, and that website, Adoption Survival, which is great. I love that.
Yes, and we'll be doing blog posts. At this point, I think we're going to start doing them once a month about different topics that might be, you know, in the book or might just barely be in the book, but we had additional information on. So we're really going to be able to do some blogging with that on there as well.
Well, good. I'm your biggest fan. And like I said, thanks so much for coming on. And
well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so now you know why I couldn't cut any of that out. It was all just too valuable. I had the privilege of being a reviewer for the book. There's no fluff. It is just chock full of real life experiences from families and suggestions. It is most definitely the book I wish our agency had made us read before we jumped in, and the book I would have highlighted and dog-eared to death while walking through our experiences with our older kids. As Chris and I mentioned, our passion is visiting one-on-one with other adoptive mamas. If you're listening and don't have a support network, even if you didn't specifically adopt older kids, please reach out. The website and Facebook page for the book can be found at adoptionsurvival.com, and you can search for Dr. Kittle at Chris Kittle, PhD on Facebook. I'll have links to both of those on the show notes page at www.thecorkums.com. I've also gathered a parenting support group of sorts on Facebook. It's called Essentially Connected Parenting. You can go ahead and search for it in the search bar. It's a safe place to connect with other mamas and get advice on connected parenting. I'd love to have you join us there. Just be sure to fill out the questions when you request to join. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at M.A. Corkum. Lastly, please leave your feedback about the show as a review on iTunes or Stitcher, or by using the hashtag TheUncorkedPodcast on Instagram or Twitter. Thanks again for listening.